For nearly 40 days, 115 people from this church and elsewhere have been engaged in a faith-based program seeking a healthier life, a program called the Daniel Plan. And for the past 5 weeks, my sermons have focused on dimensions of the Daniel Plan, such as why your body matters to God, or the importance of setting goals, or how it's more effective to join with others in making changes in your life, or how faith in God brings power to your life. All those messages can be read or heard on our church's website, but today, in the sixth and final installment, I'd like us to ponder what it would mean to become who God meant us to be. As you heard all week, the VBS kids have been learning about parables, lessons from everyday life. And today we heard a parable sometimes called the parable of the talents, the parable of the three servants. The wealthy boss distributed different amounts to different servants, $5,000 to one, $2,000 to another, another $1,000. He never expected all three workers to produce the same amount of money. After all, different people had different amounts to work with. And that is a parable for our lives because each of our lives is different too. We have different situations, different conditions. We can't all do the same things because we're not all the same. Different factors have shaped each of our lives. So while we may have similarities, we're not all the same. Different things have influenced who we are. The nationally renowned Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church in California used the game of poker as an analogy for five factors that influence who you are. Now, I'm not a poker player, but I understand that in one kind of poker called five-card stud, you don't get the chance to swap out some cards for other cards. Or as the saying goes, you play the hand you're dealt. And Pastor Warren says that that's really true for our lives, too. So here are five cards we're dealt, five factors that influence who we are. The first factor is your chemistry. Your genes, your DNA have determined some things about you. Maybe your DNA has determined that you need to wear eyeglasses, or that you're going to tend to have a bad back, or that you'll be left-handed, or that you'll like the taste of Brussels sprouts. Your chemistry, your biological makeup has a big influence on who you are, and there's not too much that you can do about that. A second factor that determines your identity is your connections, your relationships in life. Who you are is shaped in great measure by the relationships, the connections you experience, especially as a child and a youth. And maybe they were healthy and nurturing, but maybe they were neglectful, even abusive. Maybe those connections were consistent, but maybe they changed a lot, creating unstable or unpredictable connections. And who you are is greatly influenced by your connections. So your chemistry, your connections, a third factor that makes you you is your circumstances, the things that happen to you that you can't control. Things like troubles, traumatic experiences, crises, pressures, abuse, rejection, failure. They're all circumstances that influence your identity. Now, there are fortunate circumstances, too, like a safe and comfortable environment or supportive relationships, intellectual and artistic stimulation, good health. Sadly, these kinds of fortunate circumstances are things we tend to take for granted because we assume that we deserve them. A fourth factor making you you is a big one. It's your consciousness. Now, that means how do you talk to yourself? How do you think about you? Because you do it all the time. And honestly, if you talked with your friends like you probably talk to yourself, your friends wouldn't stay your friends very long because you are your harshest critic. In fact, you lie to yourself. You say, I'm not as smart as other people. You say, I'm not coordinated. You say, I don't have any self-discipline. You say, I'm too skinny, or I'm too big, or I'm not as good-looking as everyone else, or I don't have a mind for money, or I'm a total klutz when it comes to anything with tools. And the reason your consciousness is so influential on your identity is because you believe yourself, even when it's not true. In Proverbs 4, verse 23, we heard, be careful what you think, because your thoughts run your life. Your fears are often self-fulfilling prophecies that will sabotage you until you challenge your thoughts, until you challenge your self-talk, your consciousness. Because feelings are not facts. Your consciousness is a strong influencer of your identity. But realize that some of the self-criticism you may be saying to yourself may be based on distorted feelings and not facts. And then a fifth factor that makes you you is your choices. Now, freedom of having choices, that's your greatest blessing and probably at the same time it's your greatest curse. I mean, some choices are stupid. For proof, just think back to the fashions of the 1970s and 1980s. But and some choices harm others, like turning your back on a friend or angrily saying something deeply hurtful to a loved one. Some choices we make are actually self-destructive. For instance, do you really want to clog your lungs with tar and nicotine in an attempt to appear sophisticated and hip and attractive? Do you really want to be consuming massive amounts of caffeine and sugar every single day? As we mature, we become aware that choices can have moral consequences too. Some consequences aren't that big a deal. Others will shape the rest of your life. But there's something unique about this fifth factor affecting your identity. Again, imagine the five factors influencing your identity as the cards in your poker hand in a game of five-card stud. Remember, in that game, you can't swap out cards. But this fifth factor of your identity is a wild card. Your choices is a wild card. And like a wild card can change number or suit, the choices you make can impact the other four factors. So for instance, while you didn't get to choose your chemistry, your biology, you can choose what you'll do with your body, what you'll put into your body, how you'll care for your body, how you'll make the most of what you have. And though you didn't get to choose all of your connections, your relationships, you can choose how you will respond to those relationships. And if some of those relationships are harmful or hurtful to you, well, you can choose to learn new relationship skills. You can choose to find people who lift you up, not tear you down. And your circumstances, many of your circumstances happen to you without your input, but you can choose how you will respond to the circumstances that shaped you and the circumstances you find yourself in now. I mean, maybe your upbringing was less than ideal. But rather than assigning blame to the people who raised you, maybe you could begin by acknowledging that they did the best they could given their circumstances, given their experience. And maybe your situation in life right now is unsettled or uncomfortable or maybe even distressing. But you can choose to focus on the positive, promising directions of your current circumstance and not obsess over what isn't going well. And as far as that fourth factor of your consciousness, how you talk to yourself, now much of that is ingrained early in life, and now it's just instinctive for you, but you can choose to work on changing the tone of your self-talk. You can say to yourself, I will not always tear myself down. After all, I wouldn't do that to my best friend. Instead, I'm going to be more encouraging and affirming to myself. After all, that's how I would want to treat my best friend. So God gives you the ability to make choices, and your choices can act like a wild card to improve some of the factors that have made you, you. Now, our goal is not to become perfect. That's not what God asks of us. That's not what God made us for. But God chose to come among us in Jesus Christ. The Gospel of John says, no one has ever seen God. God, the only Son, who is at the Father's side, God the Son has made God known. And when we look to Jesus, we see the perfect example of what God meant us to be. And though we cannot be perfect in this life, God asks us to aspire to Jesus' level of obedience and dedication. God asks us to love as graciously as Jesus does. God longs for us to show forgiveness and mercy as generously as Jesus does. And like we heard in that parable of the three servants, God doesn't expect every one of us to be exactly the same or to achieve the same things. For as the boss entrusted different things to different servants, God has entrusted different chemistry and connections and circumstances and consciousness, self-talk. God has entrusted different things to each of us. But God has also blessed us each with the gift of free will, of choice. And free will enables us to choose how we will respond to the lives we've been given. And God has come to us in Jesus so that we will choose to aspire to Christ-like living. And that's not just a pipe dream. As St. Paul wrote to the Philippians, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Being like Jesus, that's what God meant us to be. Amen.